good afternoon, Juno. It's Pat Moore, your host today for Juno Afternoon. It's just about 3 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska, and I have a jam-packed show today. We have folks coming in from UAS to tell us about the First Friday show that they're doing at the Baranoff and the ceramic sale this weekend at UAS. We'll have Julie Walker here to tell us about Girls on the Run. Stacey Gullifson is going to tell us about the jewelry that she's going to be showing as part of the gallery walk tonight. And we'll have some folks telling us about this wonderful new invention called the Art Map that allows you to pull up the gallery walk sites on your iPhone or on your cell phone as you're walking around town looking for the next thing to go see. Sarah Lee will drop in from the Alaska State Museum. She's the Sphere Master and is going to be doing a special Sphere show 3 times tonight. And let's see, we'll also have probably the highlight of our show today. Ernestine Hayes is going to come by. She has a new book out called Juno. It's a wonderful pictorial history of Juno, built as part of the Arcadia Publishers Image of America series. So we'll be hearing from Ernestine late in the show. So stay tuned for Juno Afternoon. It's time now for National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Alaska Native communities addressed domestic violence prevention at a summit this week in Juneau. KTOO's Lisa Fu reports.
The goal of the state-sponsored prevention summit was for communities to share strategies for how to prevent domestic violence and sexual assault. In Bethel, Reverend Ishmael Andrew works as the Engaging Men and Boys Coordinator for Tundra Women's Coalition, a nonprofit that runs a women's shelter and provides educational outreach. For Andrew, prevention is about practicing a traditional way of life.
Prevention to us is shooting a moose and bringing it home and, you know, giving it to the whole community. That's what prevention means to us, keeping ourselves busy instead of being idle at home.
After 3 days of attending workshops, networking, and hearing about prevention strategies used throughout the state, Andrew says he's even more confident about the work he's doing.
The Prevention Summit has really opened my eyes and made me believe that I can speak up for the people in our region now. We have resources in our communities that we really need to be going to, which are the elders and those who have been authentically living the way of life.
When he's not at work, Andrew is at home in the nearby village of Neposkiak, where he tries to spread the same values. For National Native News, I'm Lisa Fu in Juneau.
Unemployment rates for Native American workers show disparities compared to non-natives, according to a new Economic Policy Institute study. Wyoming Public Radio's Irina Zhurov has more.
The study looked at states with sizable Native American populations and calculated the employment-to-population ratio for workers between the ages of 25 and 54. It found that the gap was smallest in Mississippi at 5% and largest in South Dakota, where it was nearly 33%. Wyoming came in at about 16%. But Algernon Austin, who directs the program on race, ethnicity, and the economy at the Institute, says that when adjusted for certain factors, the gap narrowed.
After you adjust, you know, for age and gender and marital status and all of the other things that we controlled for, Wyoming actually came out to be one of the better states for Native Americans.
But that gap stayed significant in other states even after such adjustments.
Which increases the concern that part of the problem may be that American Indians continue to face discrimination in the labor market.
Austin says that in the overall analysis, education level was the single most important factor in determining employment. For National Native News, I'm Irina Zhurov.
Native leaders met at the Capitol Thursday to pressure lawmakers to end federal trademarks held by the Washington football team. Matt Laszlo has details.
When people in the Washington, D.C. region hear Redskins, they think football. But when many Native Americans hear the name, it sends shivers through them. Here's Suzanne Harjo, president of the Morning Star Institute.
This is what it means to us. It harkens back to those days when we were literally skinned and our body parts used for proof of Indian kill.
The team has 6 federal trademarks that opponents want federal officials to rescind. It also has 5 pending trademarks, which many Native leaders also want halted. Oklahoma Republican Congressman Tom Cole is from the Chickasaw Nation. He says the team should just look to the example of the NBA Washington Wizards and just change its name.
When you're in a community that is sensitive enough to change the name of its basketball team, from the Bullets to the Wizards because it doesn't want to promote violence, this to me is a pretty obvious thing to deal with.
This week, 61 faith leaders sent the Redskins a letter denouncing their team name. For National Native News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
On this day in 2012, U.S. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack released a report on sacred sites, calling for the USDA and the Forest Service to work more closely with tribes on access and protection of sites. Employee training on tribal history, law, and culture was also a recommendation. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It's 6 minutes and 10 seconds after 3 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore hosting today for Juneau Afternoon. My first guest is Sarah Lee, and Sarah is here to tell us about what she's going to be doing at 3 o'clock and 4 o'clock and 5 o'clock today, and what she does Tuesday through Friday over at the museum with a great big sphere. So you're the sphere master, huh?
I am, and some of the kids are starting to know me that way. I love talking to guests from out of town, of course, especially in the summer, our visitors to the museum, and showing them things about us, particularly Alaska and Juneau on the big globe, the 6-foot globe we have there in the Central Gallery. But I also enjoy in the winter talking to the young folks, especially that come in classes. And usually we point the other way and we look out from Juneau and we look at the rest of the world and we learn about it. And there's a lot of folks that really only understand the world by visual. And I'm one of those. I'm a little impaired. I don't do well with data. And so it's a great way to look at the world and understand it.
So now this is three-dimensional. This is a globe which can be made into the world or can be made into a star map or
Fun things. It's just a big 6-foot ball. A lot of people want to touch it because it's got very high-resolution imagery that's projected by just 4 projectors, but they're kind of high-end projectors. They do a great job, and it's seamless. So it even has, like, motion to it where the computer runs it just like a higher-end desktop that somebody might have doing gaming or computer graphics at home. And that takes the images and it then plays it and it turns them between the different quadrants of that big 6-foot ball. And you don't really even notice that it's there, so it becomes something that people want to reach out and touch often.
So, Sarah, what are you going to show us at 3 o'clock?
Actually, not 3. At 4 o'clock. I'm going to be there all evening. We're open at Alaska State Museum for a First Friday and gallery walk. And although we don't have any new incoming exhibits right now, we are still featuring 2 solo artists, David Ruman and Dick Benedict. So come in and see us. They're going to be up through December if you don't get in tonight, as well as the 10-year retrospective of the Rasmussen art. And so it's a great kind of cross-section of contemporary Alaskan art. So besides those great exhibits, come on in. And then I'm going to be there all evening as soon as I get back over across the street. And at the top of the hour, at 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, and 6, I'm going to particularly do a presentation where I kind of give you an eclectic overview of what's available to see on the sphere. And I'm going to show you maybe some of the stock NOAA, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration agency sort of views of our Earth, as well as some NASA views. They sent us information on some of the great imagery coming into us from all those different space adventures, the probes that are out there taking pictures of Saturn and Jupiter and all that kind of stuff. But I'm also going to show you some of the imagery I've created right here in Little Juneau. I'm kind of a little bit of a science nerd myself, and I'll be honest, I tend to do that on my spare time, not on my typical 9-to-5, 8-to-5 job. And I'm going to be showing you things like I've done whale migrations overlaid on phytoplankton. And so it's kind of interesting to look at that globally as well as what's happening in our area.
Sarah, I'm wondering, I don't want to get too technical about it, but let's say that you have a body of data from someone like NOAA or something that you've created yourself. How does that become images on the globe?
It's actually simpler than you would think. I do a lot of work in Photoshop, good old Photoshop. It's amazing what you can do, and, it's really evolved since I started using it a number of years ago. So I have to do these really high resolution. They're like 2,000, maybe up to 5,000 pixels on an edge, if that means anything to you. So really high resolution, it sometimes kind of bogs down the computer I'm working on. I use often the stock imagery that's already available and out there from NOAA and NASA. I sometimes even use some of the space imagery that's available, and I'll be showing some of that tonight that I did the whole voyage of Apollo 11. And it's an animation. I taught myself how to do animation, not just to do like a flat image in high resolution that wraps around the 6-foot globe, which is kind of interesting in and of itself, but then to actually have little Apollo 11 spacecraft that are moving. And so it, again, gives people a good impression of what that voyage entailed.
Sarah, you sound like a kid that got given a toy for Christmas.
It is like that. It's a big ball, yeah. And I sometimes just have fun things. And I was trying to load it, and if I have time and I get across the street, there's a snow globe, for example, that I'm going to load up on it. You know, we sometimes just have fun as well as talking about serious subjects like global climate change is a really big one that we often deal with. It's a good way to look at it on the big globe and understand it a little bit better.
Fascinating. So your shows are at 4, 5, and 6.
Correct.
That's with the presentations. But you'll be in the museum all evening long and playing with the globe and letting other people see things. Can they make requests? Can you walk in and say, hey, I'd like to see?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, okay.
And I want to also mention and definitely give a shout out that I've had some great volunteers that are also kind of dedicated and maybe not quite as obsessed as I am with this big ball and what it can do, but I'm starting to spread the word, and I've got 3 volunteers that are going to stop by and help out, Ann Fuller, Ann Gifford, and Tori and Dick, and they will be available too to answer questions and help people look through the library. There's a library of about now 600 images. So there's a lot to see. You might not be able to see it all tonight, but
wow.
I hope you come by another time as well.
So maybe get a little preview and then figure out what you want to see on your next visit. So solo exhibitions by Dick Benedict and David Rubin, and the 10 years of Alaskan art, a decade of works acquired through the Masterson Foundation Art Acquisitions Fund, and play with the globe for a little while with Sarah Lee.
And then one more thing, if I may.
Yes.
Looking ahead, you know, often young people are looking for something to do around the holidays, and we're going to have another youth activity in a couple weeks, the Friday after Christmas, which might be a good time for young people to come on by the museum. That's going to be a 1 to 3 p.m. for grades kindergarten through 5th, and it's going to be action figures. We create these great little action figure dolls that are very appropriate for Alaska, showing different types of traditional clothing, traditional gear, and I think they're becoming a collector item. There's a lot of kids that return, and there's a lot of adults that I think are looking for a kid to bring them. So please sign up for that. It's a free event, but you do have to register. It is limited in the space that's available.
How do you register?
Just call the museum. You can start in calling them tomorrow on Saturday if you wish.
Okay, good. Thank you so much.
This is Bird Note. Of all the surprises the upcoming winter might bring, among the most wonderful would be a grand influx of northern forest owls. Every few years, a surprising number of magnificent forest owls move south from the boreal forest of Canada and Alaska into the northern tier of states, especially the northern Midwest. It's likely because of a big decline in their normal rodent prey. Huge great gray owls, more than 2 feet tall with intense yellow eyes. Northern hawk owls, long-tailed and streamlined, hunting from an open perch like a falcon. And shy boreal owls, hardly ever seen unless they show up in someone's backyard or the neighborhood park during one of these special winters. Birders call these owl-laden winter events flight years or invasions, while scientists call them eruptions, movements of large numbers of birds after the breeding season into areas beyond their normal range. February of 2013 delivered a sensational owl eruption to northern Minnesota. Many eruption years are followed by what is known as an echo effect, another, if somewhat smaller, influx of northern owls. Will this be an echo year? Stay tuned.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Friday afternoon at 3:15. You're in tune with KTOO in Juneau. The Weather Bureau is saying that we're going to continue having this kind of coldish stuff until later tonight. And then the highs are supposed to jump up tomorrow to around 31. And they'll hover in the low 30s for the next few, 3 or 4 days, with possibly some snow flurries. So a little change coming around the corner here, snapping that little Arctic cold that we've been experiencing for the last couple, 3 days. My next guest is going to be spending this evening at the Bedanov Hotel. Olivia Patesa is here, and she's a student who will graduate in spring of 2014 out at UAS in Arts and Social Sciences, and she has been selected along with a number of other artists, including some art faculty, to do a show as part of Gallery Walk, which is tonight at the Baranoff. So 40 to 50 student works were chosen by a local artist couple. That's Trevor Gong and Kathy Washburn, and they'll also be showing works by Jeremy Kane, Petter Dahlthorpe, and Annie Wedler, who are faculty members out at the University of Alaska Southeast's arts program. Olivia, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm happy to talk about all the exciting things that we have going on this weekend in the UAS Art Department.
So tell us all. Tell us all.
Well, we try to do the Student Juried Art Show once a year, and it's a really exciting opportunity because at UAS we don't have a gallery designated for students. So it's not that often that we have opportunities to have our work juried and then display it to the public. So this is a great opportunity for us, and especially because it pulls works from all the different art classes. So if you go to the Baranoff tonight or any time this month, you'll see paintings, sculptures, prints from the printmaking class, digital photography, and also ceramics from that department.
Okay. Now, what are you specifically adding to the show? What are you bringing to us?
I'm submitting two works of ceramics, one set of two lidded jars and a flask that I've decorated that was fired in a soda kiln, which was a kind of a special kiln that a student built a few years ago here on campus with an undergraduate research grant. So it's a little bit of a different process. The two jars that I submitted were fired in our the kiln that we use standardly on campus. But you can only submit a work from the class that you're in. So it's a lot of professors require that students submit things as sort of a learning process, and it gives the public an opportunity to see what folks are working on in each class.
What does a soda kiln do that's different?
I'm not directly involved in firing it because I'm an intermediate class and I've only taken a few ceramics classes, but it's a pretty neat process. It involves a lot of wood, so the students have to chop up a bunch of wood and spend a lot of time, you know, shoveling it in there. And it's an atmospheric kiln, so you've got a bunch of soda ash flying around, and they also ladle in veggie oil. So that's another appealing aspect of it, is that it's, you know, considered a little bit more environmentally friendly because you're able to get this veggie oil from, you know, restaurants around the community.
Now, in addition to creating works of art and putting them on display, I understand you're a world traveler.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, you know, I've done a lot of travel independently, but then I've also been able to go on various exchange programs through the university. I went on a faculty-led trip to Cuba, where I was able to apply my anthropology in writing and ethnography, also studying Spanish. I'm getting a minor in Spanish. And then last year I did a national student exchange to a Cal State school in Northern California, Humboldt State. And that's a great program that the university offers where students can continue paying U.S. tuition and go see another school in the country.
It's a really wonderful program, and a number of our students have taken a big advantage of it to be able to broaden their view of the world and then come back to Juneau with
yeah,
the information.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And as a, you know, I've been so focused on world travel that I hadn't seen very many states in my own country, so going to California was a bit of a culture shock for me, as funny as that sounds.
Yeah, and Humboldt State, it's, you know, a particularly lovely area of California. So,
absolutely,
yeah.
The redwoods on the
right.
coast.
Right. So, well, this is wonderful. So people can, as part of the walk around tonight, and we're going to hear in just a few moments about the special thing that UAS has come up with, or that KTOO has come up with, that is a phone application. So tonight people will be able to find you because they can use their their phones to know where to go next during the art walk. So you'll
you're
featured as part of that program, I think. So anyway, so Olivia Patesa and other students from the University of Alaska Southeast Arts Program in a juried art show showing at the Baranoff. Do you happen to know what time they're actually opening the doors for this show? I think it's around 4:30 or so.
Yeah, I'm under the impression it's around 4:30, and I think we'll be kind of striking the place down around 8.
Okay, good. So. And then there's also a pottery sale this weekend.
Yeah, I was going to mention that. It started today at 10 a.m., and it's funny, there were actually a bunch of folks lined up outside of the door.
Every year.
And so it goes from 10 to 6 today and tomorrow.
And so this is the annual pottery sale. It's very popular here. It's in the Sobolev building out on the UAS campus, which is where the pottery workshop is, and runs from 10 to 6 both days. This is pottery that's been produced by the students out at UAS. Wonderful pieces and wonderful prices as well. So a real opportunity to maybe pick up a Christmas gift or some other piece of pottery that just appeals to you as well.
Absolutely. And we will be cracking open a kiln Saturday morning, so there will be some things fresh off the production line, because there's already been a lot of pieces purchased, so, but it's not too late.
Good. Okay. Well, thank you very, very much. My next guest is wearing baubles, bangles, and beads, and she made them herself. Stacy Gullifson is here, and she's part of tonight's art walk, and also has become a purveyor of her own art. She runs a thing called Southeast Alaska Chic Charms, and this is jewelry that you're making yourself.
It is.
Yeah. Step up closer to that mic, if you would, just a little bit. There we go. Okay, so tell us about how you became inspired to begin beading.
Well, in 2000, I started beading on silk fibers, and I had kind of put my things aside for a while. And in 2008, I was in the Juneau Public Market, and I had really good success and went into several shops here in the Juneau area. And since then, I've expanded in Southeast Alaska and keep myself very busy.
So can you I think you have a website where people can go and take a look at some of your stuff.
I do.
Yeah. Could you give us directions on how to get there? I'm just
Yes, it's www.seakchiccharms.com.
Okay. And tonight, are you showing anything that we should particularly be looking for in your show? And where are you showing?
I'm showing at the JAC, the Juneau Arts Humanities Council, from 4:30 to 7 for the gallery walk. And I come up with different new designs all the time when I do annual shows. I have new designs that nobody has really seen before, and I have some signature designs as well.
Okay, and I'm going to try to describe, turn your head just a little bit.
Okay.
So so she's wearing earrings that she made herself, and they are shaped in a long pointed oval, and then there's rows of beads inside them kind of randomly arranged. And it's really quite original. I haven't seen a design quite like that. And so when you start doing something like this, can you describe a little bit of the process of what it is that gets you going? How do you start it?
Well, I like things that sparkle, and I use a lot of Swarovski crystals, Czech glass. I really like, you know, the glass and the crystals that catch the eye and that sparkle in the light.
Uh-huh.
And I just I wire wrap and I hammer my components and design, and I kind of get in the mode and I do a lot of ordering for components.
A lot of moving things around until you get it so that it works right.
Mm-hmm.
Do you lose track of time?
Sometimes.
Painters tell me that's, and I know from my own creating activity that's something that goes on. So when mm-hmm. when you sit down there and you start ordering, as you say, do you notice that the clock kind of changes the way the hands move?
It does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a wonderful aspect of art that really is part of the creative process and a wonderful piece of the creative process. Your show is at the Jack.
Yeah.
I think you said they were opening up tonight at
4:30
to 7. Mm-hmm. Okay, good. So you'll be there with your pieces.
Yeah.
And a chance to get to take a look and talk to the artist herself. And like that, Stacy, good luck with the show.
Thank you.
I hope a whole bunch of people come to see your stuff.
Yep.
Good enough.
Thank you.
A little more of baubles, bangles, and beads here to go on. Tonight is a night of baubles, bangles, and beads with Gallery Walk starting out in most places around 4:30 this afternoon, right after the show is over. So wander around Juneau and find your way. Very shortly, we'll be hearing from some of the folks who have worked up this new art map that's available that works with your cell phone and kind of guides you from one exhibit to another. But before we do that, we are going to hear from someone who is a return guest. Julie Walker's back here, and was here last when you were planning the last year's event. This is coming up pretty quick here. Girls on the Run, it's a 5K race, right?
Right.
So tell us what's up.
Well, Girls on the Run, our 5K event is tomorrow morning, actually, at the Diamond Park Fieldhouse. This is a semi-annual event, so we probably were here a few months ago.
Yeah, you were here about 6 months ago, yeah. Summertime.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So who can enter and how do they enter and like that? Or is everybody all signed up and no one can get in now?
So, well, the event is really a celebratory event for the girls that have been participating in the Girls on the Run program. So
okay.
If you're not familiar with Girls on the Run, it's an after-school program that really focuses on empowering and teaching healthy lifestyle skills to 3rd to 8th grade girls. So mostly we are in the elementary age, elementary schools, 3rd to 5th grade, and then we also have a small amount of girls that are in Santa Kini Middle School participating. So these girls will be gathering together tomorrow morning to complete their 5K, which they've been training for 12 weeks. So it's
mm-hmm.
really a time for them to celebrate and for families and friends to come out and celebrate with them.
So it's at Diamond Park Fieldhouse, and starts at what time?
Well, we start our pre-race festivities, which is probably the most exciting part, which is girls get to get their hair spray painted in different colors and faces painted. We've got volunteers from JYS coming to do face painting and Big Brothers Big Sisters coming to do, we call it happy hair. And Glacier Pediatrics will be doing mustache tattoos, which the girls are very excited about. So this pre-race festivities time starts at 10 o'clock, and then we'll actually begin the running and walking at 11 o'clock.
Okay. And so you have runners and walkers as well.
Yes.
So this is not a highly competitive, this isn't the Olympics.
Right. This is definitely not the Olympics.
It's so much girls, more about empowering.
Right. Girls on the Run is really about empowering young girls. So there's every lesson, there's over this 12 weeks, they attend these lessons. There's a short lesson of the day, whether it be peer pressure or body image or how to communicate with others. There's all sorts of these positive socio-emotional lessons that they learn throughout, and they also train for a 5K. So it's not just a running program. It really is an empowerment program with healthy lifestyle skills built in that uses the power of running to build their confidence. So they set a goal, they train for it for 12 weeks, and then they accomplish it. And that's a pretty powerful thing.
Mm-hmm. Julie, this isn't the only one of these that's ever going to happen, right? You're going to turn around and do it again?
Yeah, so we have been doing this since 2007. This is a program of AWARE, our local domestic violence sexual assault program, and we do it twice a year. So we'll be starting up our spring season again in February. We'll be looking for volunteer coaches starting in January. We train all our coaches, and that new coach training will be on January 18th, and then we'll start our spring season in February and have another 5K in May. So it's a twice annual mm-hmm. event.
Mm-hmm. If somebody wants to do it, or if you know somebody who should do it, and you want to make sure that they get into it, like a daughter, I guess, how do they sign up?
So sign-ups are through schools, through mostly school counselors. So they'll be sending information home in early February, all the schools that are offering the program. So the schools have the option to offer the program or not, and then AWARE works with them to provide the volunteer coaches and the the materials needed and running shoes for the girls, things like that. So just would want to talk to your school counselor and see if it's being offered at your school in February would be the best time to ask.
Okay. Running shoes for the girls, are those provided?
Yeah, AWARE has a lot of really generous sponsors, donors, grants, and we are able to provide scholarships to any girl that needs one, and we're also able to provide running shoes to any girl that needs a pair of running shoes for the program.
That could be a big part of this process. I mean, that's an expensive, good running shoes are an expensive acquisition, particularly for kids with growing feet.
Yes.
So, yeah. And so the age range, again, that you're looking to enter the program is?
3rd to 5th grade for elementary, and then if it's offered at your middle school, that would be 6th to 8th.
Okay, and that'll depend on whether the packet comes home with the student.
Right.
Okay, and one more time now, if people are interested in coming out and celebrating with the girls, that's at the field house at what time on what day?
Tomorrow morning
at 10
a.m.
10 a.m. is the beginning ceremony, and then the actual running will be, or running and walking will start at?
11.
About 11. Okay,
right.
Good. All right. And then the next opportunity for someone to do this, the course will begin on?
So January 18th, for coaches that are interested in getting involved, there's a training on January 18th. So
okay.
If you're interested in becoming a volunteer coach, please contact me at AWARE, which is 586-6623. And if you're interested in signing up a girl in your life, go ahead and just wait for information in February from your school. But be looking for it in February.
Okay. And then the next one of these celebratory events will be in May. So
yes.
the one tomorrow, and then another one in May, and like that, and onward goes the program. Wonderful. Julie, thank you so much. You're obviously just completely enthused about this. You got
Can't
a great
wait.
Smile that goes crazy. So I'm sure you're going to have a great time tomorrow morning with all of the
Thank you. We're really excited.
Yeah, thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday, the 6th of December, 2013. It's the birthday of the novelist Sylvia Townsend Warner, born in Harrow, suburban London, 1893. Her father was a teacher at the Harrow School, and when Warner was 19, she began a love affair with one of her father's colleagues, a 41-year-old music teacher named Percy Buck. He was married with 5 children. He and Sylvia were lovers for 17 years. And then she met a woman, Valentine Ackland, 6 feet tall, wore pants and ties, cut her hair short, and she and Warner remained together as lovers until Ackland's death almost 40 years later. Warner wrote about Ackland in a letter to a friend, "Here I am, gray as a badger, wrinkled as a walnut, and never a beauty at my best. But here I sit, and yonder sits the other one, who had all the cards in her hand, except one, that I was better at loving and being loved. Sylvia Townsend Warner's first novel was Lolly Willows, 1926, about a lonely spinster who cares for her father, other family members, is so tired of her family, her responsibilities, she sells her soul to the devil to become a witch. It was a book with subversive messages that became a surprise bestseller. It's the birthday of Ira Gershwin, New York City, 1896. He was working in his father's Turkish bath when he began to write lyrics for his younger brother George's songs. Ira Gershwin, who wrote, "I fetch his slippers, fill up the pipe he smokes, I cook the kippers, laugh at his oldest jokes, yet here I anchor. I might have had a banker. Boy, what love has done to me." Ethel Merman sang it in 1930 in the musical Girl Crazy. Today is the feast day of St. Nicholas, a 4th century bishop from Myra in what is now Turkey. Many parts of the world today is the day that children get gifts. They put out their shoes the night before, and they get fruit or coins or toys. And it's the birthday of Susanna Moody, born in Bungay, England, 1803. She and her husband emigrated to Canada, and she wrote about the hard life of the Canadian frontier in her memoirs, Roughing It in the Bush, which has remained a classic of Canadian literature, like Laura Ingalls Wilder's Little House Books, but more grim. She said, "My motive in giving such a melancholy narrative to the British public was prompted by the hope of deterring well-educated people about to settle in this colony from entering upon a life for which they were totally unfitted by their previous pursuits and habits." Here's a poem for today by Mary Oliver entitled "I Looked Up." I looked up, and there it was among the green branches of the pitch pines, thick bird, a ruffle of fire trailing over the shoulders and down the back, color of copper, iron, bronze, lighting up the dark branches of the pine. What misery to be afraid of death, what wretchedness to believe only in what can be proven. When I made a little sound, it looked at me, then it looked past me, then it rose, the wings enormous and opulent, and, as I said, wreathed in fire. A poem by Mary Oliver, I Looked Up, from Owls and Other Fantasies, published by Beacon Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, offering poetry podcasts to listen to, thousands of poems to read at poetryfoundation.org. And by Lumosity. Lumosity.com's daily online workouts are designed to improve memory and attention and are dedicated to helping people feel sharper, think faster, and remember more. More at Lumosity.com. Produced by Joy Biles, with assistance by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
21 and a half minutes before 4 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore, your host today for Juneau Afternoon. Our own Scott Burton is here. He's our arts, music, and culture director here at KTOO and is going to introduce a wonderful new tool for gallery walk.
That's right, Pat. Thanks for having me on Juneau Afternoon today. I appreciate it. So I suspect some of you right now are perhaps driving downtown. You've gotten off work. It's Friday, ready to go look at some art. And you're thinking, well, where do I stop? Where do I park? What am I going to go see? Once you do make those choices and you stop and park, you can pull out your iPhone. You can go to ktoo.org, and you can click on the gallery walk icon. It's right there at the top of the page on your smartphone. And then at the very top of that, it'll take you to this new page, and you can click on list or map. Okay, and since I personally know what downtown Juneau looks like, I am going to click on list, and I have my iPhone in front of me right now, so I'm going to click on list, and all of a sudden I see Alaska Robotics Gallery, Alaska Brewing Company, Alaska State Museum, Annie Kales, Canvas City Museum, Hearthside Books, Jack Copa, The Rookery, 209 Seward. What's 209 Seward? Pat, I'm going to click on it right now.
Okay.
And when I click on it, I see this image, and I see Abe Wiley and Todd Mace at 209 Seward Street. Happens to be an empty space right across from Zephyr. And I see a representative image of the kind of art that they'll be showing there tonight. I also see a description. Abe Wiley will be showing 11 illustrations and an installation. KXLL DJ Todd Mace, a.k.a. Scorcher, will spin music. So right there, I know one place that I can go. That looks interesting, or you might be like, ah, that art's not for me. Let's see what's going on at the Rookery, and you can click on the Rookery. Sarah Conroe's art is there. The Rookery is exhibiting art by Sarah Conroe. There will be small treats on hand for gallery walkers, and dinner service will start at 5. And anyway, what this is it's our way of making art walk more accessible or gallery walk more accessible, and sometimes it can be overwhelming. This way you can click and actually see a representative image of the art at the various places, the State Museum, the Jack, all the various galleries and businesses downtown. This is the brainchild of our very own Lisa Fu, so props to Lisa for thinking of this idea. And Heather Bryant is the web person who also contributed to the idea and put this whole thing together. She's our web guru here. And Jeremy Shea helped. I helped a little bit. I hope people like it. It's evolving. If people have feedback or ideas, Pat, you already said to me, I wish that map text was a little bit bigger when I open that so I can see it.
So those of us with older eyes than yours have a little trouble finding the tiny print up at the top. Anyway, it's a wonderful concept, and the map is I think useful from the idea of maybe mapping out in advance how you're going to walk around town.
Sure.
Because I want to go see this, I want to go see this, I want to go see this, and that kind of gives you the order to set it up in.
Yeah.
There's also, if you don't have a cell phone or if you don't want to use modern technology to do this, you can still go to the Jack, and they have that wonderful little piece of paper that you've been able to get for a long, long time, which tells you where everything is. Tonight is Gallery Walk. It's the biggest one of these art events of the whole year for Junoites, and a wonderful opportunity to go around, see a bunch of really wonderful new openings, new pieces of art and like that. We've talked to just a couple of people on this show today, and all week long we've been talking to folks who are going to be part of this weekend's Gallery or Friday night's Gallery Walk. Folks, this is a big one tonight, so pull up the KTOO webpage and click on the Arts Walk map and get a little guidance and get yourself out there and seeing the art and maybe finding, the perfect Christmas present, wouldn't it
perfect
be?
Perfect art to buy.
Wouldn't it be nice?
For the holidays. Can I add one thing,
Pat?
Yeah,
go ahead.
And then I'll go. We want to do this every first Friday. And to participate, send us your picture and your description. It's a representative picture of the art you'll be showing and a short description. You can send that to Heather at ktoo.org. We want to make this sustainable, something people can count on, a tool for everyone.
You bet. So if you're not in this one, get in the next one.
That's right.
You bet. Thank you. It's 3:45, and you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore, your host today for Juneau Afternoon. It is not often that I get a chance to sit down with someone that I've worked with in the past who is now has been for some time a nationally known author and has just finished a wonderful new work. Ernestine Hayes is here in the studio. Susan Hickey brought her over from Hearthside Books, and tonight there's going to be a book signing as part of the gallery walk. And the book is Images of America's Juneau. This is an edition. If you look in the back of the book, there's a U.S. map that shows that we have joined a veritable panoply of towns across the United States who are all part of the Arcadia Publishing Company Images of America series. And so now there's one on Juneau. Welcome, Ernestine. And
thank
welcome,
you.
Susan. Yeah, so this was partially grant-funded. Your acknowledgement page lists a number of people that that supported you and assisted in this process, because when you got into the thing, you wound up having to find a way to print a lot of really wonderful historic images of Juneau and early history around here. How did you get selected to be the author of this edition of the book?
Well, at the beginning, the Arcadia Books contacted me and asked me if I would be interested in authoring a series, part of their series on Juneau, and they had been given my name by Hearthside Books.
No. Oh.
And I looked into the publisher because I wasn't familiar with the series, and they sent one to me that had been done on Wrangell, the only other one that has been done on Southeast Alaska. And it looked really interesting, and so I said yes. And we signed the contracts, and I gave what I thought were reasonable deadline dates. And and then they sent me the templates, and
I'm laughing because no author's dates are ever considered reasonable by a publisher. Yeah.
And I thought I'd just be able to pick the pictures off the internet and everything would be fine. And I realized that they needed high definition photographs, and some are available from the Library of Congress, the Geologic Survey, and other places around the internet, but not very many. And at the State Archives, they have wonderful pictures, but of course there's an associated cost. They don't make a profit, but they do have to charge for the service. And so I didn't know what I could do about that, because we have to have almost 200 pictures in each book. And the Juneau Community Foundation was generous enough to support me for most of the pictures, and the University of Alaska Southeast also helped. And so that's with their generosity, the pictures in the book were made available.
I want to get into the book in a moment, but Susan, as long as I have you here, were you the one who made the recommendation?
You know, I don't really remember. It was a few years ago. But, yeah, we're glad it all worked out.
Yeah, yeah. So the books arrived, incidentally, at 3 o'clock yesterday afternoon.
Yes, that was a little bit of a tweaker. A
little of a tight deadline there. I was anxious to get my pre-read copy. And so were you, I would imagine, so
yeah.
She'd have something to sign tonight,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but they did. The service came through, and they did plop down on the
desk.
Well,
this was, you know, we knew it was going to be tight because this is the week of release of the book.
Yeah.
But we thought, like, maybe Monday would be the time we would get the book.
Last Monday, not next.
But they're all here, and it's a great book. I haven't had much time to look through it other than leaf through it, and I just can't wait to sit down and read it.
So the signing is at the downtown Hearthside
tonight during gallery
starting
walk.
What time?
5 to 7. Ernestine will be there, maybe even a little bit earlier tonight. And Front Street is blocked off for festivities downtown tonight, but you know, it's a beautiful night downtown. It's dry, the sidewalks are clear, and there's lots going on.
And it's warmed up just a little bit, too.
Yeah,
Nice cooperation, Weather Bureau. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
It's up in the high 20s now.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And also, I believe John Blasco is bringing the Thunder Mountain basketball team down to sing carols in front of our bookstore tonight. So
well.
That'll be fun.
Yeah. Oh. So the format for this was basically that you would put about a three-paragraph introduction to a chapter on a particular topic and then follow it with a collection of photographs that just breathtakingly wonderful images, knock your socks off images, and it's like, holy moly, where did she find all that stuff? And then each one of these images is captioned with enough information not only to tell us who's in the image, but also I noticed you were able to throw in a little history here and a little history there. I noticed you didn't have space in one place to put an image of a lighthouse, so you stuck the information about the dangerous waters in a piece that had to do with travelers and visitors to Juneau and like that. Nice slide in there, Ernestine. Nice work on that. So all the way through the book, one of the things that that you decided, or I'm sure it is you, it was this emphasis that throws all the way through the book that says that the first people in Juneau were not a bunch of gold miners, that the first people in Juneau were here a long time before that and were doing things around the Juneau area a long time before that. Your other book is called Blonde Indian, your famous book, and then you've also written the first children's book in Tlingit. This is obviously something that you feel very deeply, that this is a story that needs to be told.
Absolutely, and it was the main reason why I agreed to take on this project, because I've seen too many history books that begin in 1741 and call everything that happened before that prehistory, and I knew that there was a chance that someone might write a book about Juneau history, and if they weren't familiar with the depth of Juneau history, might just simply have one chapter, call it Our Natives, and everything else is about non-native history. In this particular book, I not only wanted to emphasize the native history of Juneau and the importance of the indigenous occupation here, but I wanted to weave it throughout so that it wasn't just in one chapter, but it was that Native participation in Juneau history is substantial throughout, and I wanted that to be clear in the pictures and in the writing.
I sense you probably had a real struggle because of the paucity of pictures of Natives. There's two pictures of two Native bands, and there's a shot of Chief Cowie, which I had never seen before. I had no idea what he looked like. And then there's a couple of other pictures where there's a Native in the picture. But compared to what was available to you of the white settlers in Alaska, you must have felt some real frustration at not being able to find more images of the Native population.
Well, that's true, and there are a significant number of historical pictures that deal with Native issues and feature Native people, but a great number of those pictures are in Sitka, and we had to concentrate on Juneau, which had far fewer, and as you say, it wasn't as many available, but we had some, and then of course I made up for what I could, as you say, in the captions and introductions.
And cleverly done too.
Thank you.
Yeah, there's a section of the book that particularly reflects the depth of your feeling and the way in which you approach this. I wondered if you would read that in a couple of paragraphs there from the beginning of, I think it's chapter 7 of the book.
I'd be happy to. It's chapter 3.
Chapter 3.
And the title of the chapter is called Since Time Immemorial. The Occoquan controlled and made use of all the area from what is now Berners Bay southward to the Taku Inlet, and their main permanent community was located a few miles north of what is now downtown Juneau. When winter weather began to set in and winter winds began to stir, the Occoquan returned to their permanent community, where the climate is milder and winters are not as harsh. However, throughout the year when weather permitted, the Occoquan regularly traveled across their wide territory, and they routinely sailed in exceptional watercraft to the location that is now downtown Juneau to hunt, fish, and gather specific resources to consume and to preserve for year-round use. The area that is now downtown Juneau is known as Zuntakahini in reference to the flounder that were once found in large quantities and easily caught in sufficient numbers. Local streams were known to have an abundance of salmon. Other plants and animals were available for summer harvest. The original peoples of this area, the Occoquan and the Tlingit Nation itself, measure their history by the movement of the glaciers. They remain the people in the Juneau area who have the longest preserved history, a history that bears out their declaration that they have lived in this place since time immemorial.
Which, I spent the summer driving a tour bus. I'd never done that before, and it was really fascinating to try to. I had two struggles. One was a number of people on the bus who had never even thought about Juneau before they arrived on the shore, which meant that I had to try to, in the 20 or 30 minutes that I would have with them between destinations, I would have to try to give them whatever I could. But the real struggle was trying to find any kind of concise, accurate information about the town of Juneau, because there are some works that are assembled, but they're mostly recollections of people, and they are very difficult to kind of plow through and get what you need. I wish I'd had this book at the beginning of summer, because you corrected several of the dates that I thought I had right, and things like that. But this is unique in that none of the other sources that I could find really had a view of the time before. And as you said, they all start in 1741, or even worse than that, 1880, which is when gold was discovered here, and that's the point at which kind of the history of Juneau all starts in the minds of most people. So this is a really valuable new resource, and I personally thank you for it, because it's a chance to kind of I love talking about the place I live, and this is information that I will be drawing on. So thank you so much for putting
glad.
It in a place.
Thank yeah. you. I really appreciate those words.
Yeah. The other aspect of the book, which you did with a very refreshing frankness, is your willingness to openly talk about how the white population, the white settlers, openly attempted to completely take away all aspects of the culture and the language. It was part of a missionary zeal that we would say nowadays, in our modern view of time, it was wrong. But at the time, it seemed to them to be exactly what they needed to do, was to help these poor Indians come into the modern world, I guess, was what drove that image. But it's only very recently that people have felt comfortable about bringing that view to the world. And so I thank you very much for frankly doing that.
Thank you. And I join you in the belief that that's the only way that we're going to move forward.
Ernestine, everybody has a chance to take a look at your book. They can get you to sign the copy of it tonight at the Hearthside Books downtown starting at 4:30. I hope you have a whole bunch of people show up and listen to the Christmas carols out and things. Susan, thank you so much for bringing Ernestine down to the studio to talk to us about her new work.
Thank you.
If you would like to hear more about Ernestine's book and a profile of Ernestine, you can go to ktoo.org and click on the link for that. This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast on translators K276 AF in the Mendenhall Valley in Auk Bay, K269 AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K201 AM in Gustavus, K220 BT in Hoonah, and K210 AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, we're on GCI Cable on digital channel 871, and we're also online at ktoo.org.